was bound in jail. Had no money for to go their bail. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on, hold on, hold on. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on.
Good evening. This is Jim Vredos. Welcome to another show of the Rebbe, the Radical, and the Rev. I'm your host. I'm a professor of sociology and criminology at John Jay College, and I'm thrilled to invite three or four individuals who have experienced prison life. They are now out of prison. They are functioning at tremendously progressive levels and are involved in a variety of programs that we would like to talk about tonight. Larry White is here. His program, Hope Lives for Lifers Project. Farid is here. He is involved in the Release Age Prisoners Program. Angel Ramos is here. He is head of the Breathing Space Program. And we also have, she just came in, Ask Beatty from the Ask Beatty Program, which is on Tuesday at 7 o'clock. And we will be talking about some of the relationship needs that people are involved in, are needing to talk about as they get released from prison, as they try to function outside the system. So welcome, everybody, to this program. I'm so glad you're here, and you are important voices for our audience to consider. In the last couple of weeks, of course, we've had David Rothenberg, who is the founder of the Fortune Society. We've had Sudhir Venkatesh, the sociologist who was embedded with street gangs in Chicago. And today we are, again, talking to individuals who have experienced the criminal justice system from the inside. And they offer an incredibly important perspective that people need to know about. So, again, Larry, Mohajid, Angel, and Beatty, welcome to the show.
Hey.
Hey. And why don't we start with Larry? Larry, tell us a little about the program, what you've been doing since you left prison.
Well, you know, I served 32 years in prison. I came home in 2007. Mm-hmm. I worked with the Fortune Society. But before I came home, I was deeply involved in making changes in the prison in the prison system from a perspective of someone who was serving time. Me and Eddie Ellis developed a new approach to the prison movement, in which prisoners begin to express and to develop their own programs on how to change and make developments in themselves, so that when they were released back from the community, they could involve themselves in the life struggles of their community.
This did not exist in prison at the time. So you and Eddie were the ones that...
We developed our own programs. All right. So since I've been home, I made the promise to them when I left to come home that I would come back and finish developing the program. There were no programs for long-term prisoners mm-hmm. while I was in the prison system. Prisons weren't originally designed to serve that much time. And when they began to give out that much time, they didn't have the programs, all right, to go along with them. We had to develop them ourselves. I was serving a 25-year life sentence. You know, when I came in, no one told me how to approach that. You know, I had to develop that myself. And so we began to band together. The more active prisoners began to band together, and we formed the movement, you know, did the kind of work that brought about changes that are in the prison system now. We were never given credit for it by the administration, you know, but we did a lot of work with legislators and community organizations, and the word spread on the outside. So since I've been home, mm-hmm. All my actions have been trying to get a program developed to go back inside and help those who are serving long-term prisoners, those who have been abandoned, you know, and by society. We have people that are serving life without parole sentences. They'll spend the rest of their life behind prison. There are no programs for these people. They don't know how to develop programs for these people. Right. And that's what I involved myself in, sure.
Okay, well, we'll get back to some of the more specific programs you're involved in. Farid, how about you? What have you been involved
in? Yes, thank you, Jim. First, I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity.
I'm very glad
to
do so.
That I'm engaged in. But in your introduction, you mentioned that the RAP program, which is the release of aging people in prison. Mm-hmm. But I'm actually leading two programs, the RAP campaign that you mentioned, and also a project called Rise and Shine Small Business Coalition. And I only mention that because I find the work that I'm doing in both of them are interrelated and very important for the overall goals and the objective that we're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. But I'll say a little bit about the RAP program first. RAP is a campaign that is seeking fair and objective hearings for all individuals who come before the board for release. In addition, we are seeking to expand the rate of release under the compassionate release laws. Mm. And any other method that, you know, can get people out. And RAP focuses on the elderly because that particular problem within the issue of mass incarceration, we see as a manifest injustice. And I say is that because the population that we are targeting has the absolute lowest rate of return. When I say that, I mean these are the people least likely to be released and commit another crime. Mm-hmm. Whereas the overall recidivism rate may be around 40% to 60%, depending on the jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. The rate of elderly people, the people we're targeting, is somewhere around 1%.
Wow.
And so it's totally irrational for the system, especially here in New York, to be repeatedly denying these people release solely because of an urge to exact as much punishment as possible. In my own case, I was sentenced to a term of 15 years to life. As you might know, in New York State, when you commit serious offenses, you get a sentence with life on the end. Mm-hmm. These are indeterminate sentences. Indeterminate. You may have a minimum period imposed, such as 15 years, 20 years, 25. And in the case of people who are young when they commit these serious crimes, they may have something like 5 to life or 8 to life or whatever. But the point is that in the indeterminate sentencing structure, there is the idea of rehabilitation. Otherwise, these people would have been sentenced under life without parole.
Right.
Which it does exist now, but at the moment we are focusing on people who were parole eligible because of the implication of rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. As I said, I had 15 years to life, but I actually just came home 2 years ago after serving 33 years.
Wow.
And the extra 18 years that I served was senseless. Nothing was really accomplished except that I got older. All of my major accomplishments that point towards rehabilitation had happened before my 15-year minimum imposed term. At that 15-year period, although I came into the system without a GED or a high school diploma, at that 15-year period, I had 4 college degrees, including 2 master's degrees. But that was totally ignored simply because of what the parole authorities cite all of the time when they want to deny someone nature of the crime. A mm-hmm. factor that would never change in any of these cases.
Right.
So,
incredible.
Yeah, I want to shift a little bit and talk about Rise and Shine. And what happened was, as we began launching the rap campaign, which was, you know, as I said, to increase the release rate of the elderly, we did an informal survey. And although I knew services would be a big issue, what kind of services would be provided for these people if we were successful in increasing their release rate, I didn't realize how serious that concern was. We did an informal survey, and almost everyone in the inner city neighborhoods expressed that concern. And so what happened was we had to shift focus and spend a lot of our energies touching base with service-oriented organizations. I had already started the project that I mentioned called Rise and Shine Small Business Coalition because of my concern in that area. Rise and Shine is designed to capture the people who are being released out of the prisons, as well as disadvantaged people in the community, and that have the wherewithal to create small businesses and provide the assistance for that to happen. And the only provision that we had was that everybody operate on the principles of social entrepreneurship, which is to build the community economic structure. And with that, I'll just pass on to...
Angel, tell us a little about what you've been involved in. Then we'll get more specific as we get along and ask Beattie, too, on her comments.
Okay. You know, as Larry mentioned earlier before, a lot of us, when we came in the prison, I also did 30 years. I was sentenced to 15 to life, achieved most of my successes by the 15-year mark because I realized, I thought, what they said was, in 15 years you will be released, you will be, have to be responsible, you have to become a member of your community, and I had to learn what that was. And so when I came to the board, I'm waiting to be released, and then they hit me. No, I turned out they denied me because I was a threat to the safety of the community, or whatever the terminology was at the time.
Based on the crime that you initially
I could never change, I could, you know, never recover from, which there was, you know, there was just no coming back from. There's no coming back from.
Belief that people can't change.
Well, you know, it's a funny, you know, it's when you learn to, when you live on the inside, you live outside the box, so you tend to see the civilization as outside the box. You study the civilization because you never really knew this civilization as we see it. You learn, you know, I was fortunate in that I came into a period where there were a lot of Black Panthers, and, you know, that movement was still around. There was still a lot of guys, so that, you know, they, you know, a lot of it was educate yourself, realize what did you do wrong, how did that impact your community, and why is it that you're here? Why is it that you're here for real? Don't make excuses. I didn't do it. I was sitting on the church step minding my own business, and they came and arrested me, and I'm doing here. Take responsibility for what you've done. Be a man. Take responsibility, and someday you're going to be out in the community, and you have to be responsible. But there were no programs to find that out. Luckily, you know, there were some older gentlemen that were doing time, and so, you know, they kind of helped guide the new kids, because we were kids at the time, through that. Came out, and like my wife says, I'm living an epic. Was on Broadway, went from Attica to Broadway, you know, books and all that, and, you know, seeing this system from both sides, but realize there are problems. There are, first of all, one of the first things me and Larry attended, actually, we saw the district attorney, Charles Hines, in Brooklyn, and it was strange because they're talking about us. They talk about how empowering us and giving us jobs, and here we are, two guys out of prison, really having a difficult time finding jobs. So we go up to them and say, well, we're the guys you guys are talking about, and then we hear, because they couldn't, you know... they couldn't provide the services that we needed. They weren't into that, you know, they were advocating for that, but they weren't specifically in that area, right, to serve us, which proved interesting for us because it kind of pushed us into, we got to do it ourselves.
Rhetoric. It was all rhetoric.
Well, it wasn't really rhetoric. Rhetoric. It's that they just wasn't prepared. They didn't expect anybody from the crowd to come up and say, I'm the guy you were just talking about. Why don't you give me a hand? It was not, you know, but anyway, it was funny.
Okay.
But the thing is that it helped us kind of think Well, we're going to have to, just like in prison, we're going to have to learn to stand on our own out here. Survive out here in a different way. And then you realize there's a difference between the guys who do long-term, when you come out, how they re-socialize themselves, and a difference when, you know, guys that do come in and out, in and out, in and out, they never learn the lesson that time is the only thing you have, and the most important thing that you own is time. We realized, many of us that are out here for a while, realized that there are really a lot of services that serve the long-term prisoners. A lot of us want to come out, start our businesses. We don't have the support. Some people are willing to give us support, but what they're doing is they want to exploit, because we live in a system of exploitation. You know, business is exploitation sometimes. And so, because we know the con game, because we've been in the big con house where all the worst in human behavior is there for you to see, we kind of shy away from it, or we don't transition well enough to make the adjustment to be business oriented and to think as a community and to think as someone who's never been to prison how business is done, and you know, ethics and all the rest of that. So me and a couple of friends of mine form Breathing Space. We're creating an incubator to do that, to help guys launch their businesses, provide a common infrastructure. I want success. We're not doing it for the money, so therefore we have a different motivation. Our motivation is to help people succeed, change the culture. But the only way to change the culture is to be in the culture, as opposed to somebody who's screaming on the outside of the door. We'd rather be in the building shepherding everybody out the door. This is the right door to go into, than to be screaming out the door, come on, come on, come on. It's just a different way of looking at it, a different approach, because we realize in the end we're all in this together. The one thing that prison taught me, if anything else, is that our family and the human race is a family. There are no differences. There are no thems in my world. They can't be.
But of course, the prison did take you away from your family and separated from the family.
It destroyed all connections to family.
Right.
I had to recreate in my own mind what is family.
Wow.
You know. So I decided that what is family is community family. You know, through church and religious organizations, spending inside. You know, because you work your mind and you work your body, and then what's left is spirit. So I was fortunate in that. So I come out with this tradition. I'm a Quaker. I come out. I want to help. I want to help in a way that's meaningful and that will make a difference, not just for me, but for the next generation. Not only, so we figure we'll do a Christmas tree farm. And it's really for, so a guy comes out, he hasn't seen his children for a while, go take a Christmas tree down, go spend some time, go breathe. Another, a lot of times people are just so stressed out, they have no place to stop and just focus for a moment. What is it that you want in life? And so we're trying to build a community where, so we call it the Breathing Space. We want
and making some money too, and learn how to work, right?
Well, yeah. The thing is to create your own business and to run it as professionally as possible. And, the whole, that. But to have also the network of people around you that know where you've been and are really encouraging you. Encouraging you. You're not the worst thing that ever done, as David Rutherford says. You're not the worst thing that ever done. Don't believe it. You're better than what they say. And if you're sorry, you can say you're sorry, or you can show you're sorry. And it's a difference, So right now we have a creamery going up. Mikey likes an ice cream, the best ice cream ever. Oh, it's sinful. Yeah, really, this is like sinful ice cream, And we have other businesses that we're starting, and so we figured we'll do that. We'll try to change the culture that way. We'll do movies. We'll do green technology. We'll push the limits of what they say we can't do as far as we say, well, what do you mean? Remember, it used to be black people couldn't do this. Now they could. And it's that whole thing. Don't believe them when they tell you can't do it. If you want to be part of this community, if you want to reestablish yourself, if you really want to say, I'm sorry, but I'm not the worst thing I've ever done. Let me integrate myself totally into society. You have to accept the integration first into yourself and then work out with and push that dynamic everywhere.
Sounds very therapeutic, right, Beattie? What would you like to add on?
Well, I'd like to add, if I had one wish right now, I would like this interview videotaped all over the country, if not all over the world. I'm sitting with three absolutely, truly amazing men, including my husband, Jim, who's the host. I mean, I'm listening to you, and you've served such hard time, and your emotionality, and what you're expressing, and what you have learned, and the stereotype of the man who serves hard time in lifetime. I only wish that they could see you, and I wish that they could hear you. And I also had a stereotype, and I was discussing this before the show, about the con who went to prison. And in the last number of years, I've realized that not only, you know, were the victims, but the cons that went to prison were also victims and victimized by the system and probably by the community and by the family. And I am just so moved by what you are all saying. And I would love, and I know that in the prison system there are not a lot of mental health programs, I know that I would love to be a part of something like this. I was on a panel with Tina Reynolds, who's the executive director of Women on the Rise, and she had wanted me to work with women. And whether it's women or men, I mean, people deserve to get the best kind of mental health that is available and that you deserve. And then when you come out, you deserve an opportunity to be able to get jobs, get a life, learn about relationships, and move forward.
You know, one of the most important part of transitioning, and for my own recovery as a person, I started out broken, you know, crazy family, you know, the normal stuff that we all hear and we watch in movies now. They become so cliche, but they break you, and people don't, you know, they don't give you the excuse for it. But after a while, the most important thing one of the most important things for me was therapy. There were a few people who volunteered that were therapists, and they volunteered, and they had a program, and they would do this and that. And I was fortunate to take them up because I knew, you know, when you read enough and you get an education, you realize, you know, there are things I got to work on, regardless whether I want to or not. They're blind spots in my own development that I need to fix, and the only way to go is to talk to people who would give you other ideas. So we did the inner child, and did all that, which was great. Getting in touch with me, learning to look at myself and say, you know, you're not bad. You know, you got great arms. You got great eyes. I like you, the guy in the mirror, and that's the problem. Developing a good sense of self-esteem, because you really can't care about the community if you don't care about yourself. If there's no community within yourself, the me and myself and I, if we're not integrated, we can't really help nobody. And, you know, therapy was important. And I wish we had more, actually.
Larry or Fareed, does that strike you as what is needed? Or are we also needing this large-scale structural political change to get us away from this idea of retribution and punishment? I know Larry and I have been talking about that for years.
You know, I think one of the, everybody today recognizes that the criminal justice system in this country as it operates now is broken. I mean, on all levels. I mean, even the conservatives on the federal level recognize that. How we go about fixing it now, it'll depend upon where your line of thinking is coming from. To say that the system is broken, you know, is to recognize that it's not really working to the best interest of the country as a whole.
Exactly.
When we compare
explain that
our
a little,
system,
little more, yeah. To
when
our audience,
when we
really
compare our
that.
System with systems, say, in Europe,
right,
countries like Norway, Germany, or the Netherlands, you know, we find that there's a great deal less emphasis on punishment than there is on reform. The whole objective of a person, of dealing with a person who has committed a crime, is to change their behavior and their cognitive thinking.
And you're an errant citizen, teach you about your error.
That becomes the current consideration when we find a person who's committed a crime. In this country, the primary concern is punishment. The primary concern is how serious is the crime and how much punishment. When we talk about reform and rehabilitation, there are secondary and third level considerations, you know. And what has happened because of that is that we don't try to change a person's behavior. we seem to think that the more punishment we give them, as if we can change behavior by punishment. The highest academic academy in this country has repeatedly said that punishment is the least effective way to change human behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, and what that approach has done is that we find ourselves giving out 25 years to life, 30 to life, 40 to life. They gave a Jewish guy in Brooklyn a couple of months ago, I think it was 130 years to life. You know, it's insane. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take that long to change a person's behavior, but they're not concerned with changing people's behavior in this country. They're concerned with punishment, as much punishment as you can. One thing I found out when I was in prison, for the person who must survive under it, punishment after an extended period of time is no longer punishment. It becomes something else, and so does that person. And that's my whole approach. My whole approach is that we've got to have a more treatment way of dealing with crime and with criminals.
Beginning with the idea that people can change and have the possibilities. Fareed, you agree with that? Or?
I want to say this. I'm going to most respectfully disagree with some of what was said, because I think to a large extent, what's happening serves the system very well. We have a problem also, we have to connect the dots. We have a problem of surplus labor. If you track the growth of prisons and mass incarceration, I think it would coincide well with the flight of labor. And when you have this surplus labor, you got to do something with it. And we also have to connect this with the degree of how people have been respected in the past. A lot of this surplus labor is residuals of slavery.
Yeah. Right.
Three-fifths people. You know, the problem of the three-fifths. And
less than human.
Yeah, and I think that this prison growth is something that addresses that, you know, very
another
well.
Way of channeling our energy as a country in a racist and economic way.
I think one of the things you'll note that not only in New York State, but in states throughout this country, that a lot of the prisons are located in rural areas where most of the whites are, so as to provide labor with these people from the inner cities. And I think that's a real problem that has to be addressed also when we talk about the punishment paradigm. We also got to think about who's being punished.
But you also got to think also, when you talk about that, this is a civilization that worships death. Everything about the civilization, you look at it, we are the worshippers of dead things. We worship money, we worship death, we spread death everywhere. In an insane asylum, we're the leaders of all the crazy people. Now, there are people in this world that eat each other, they're dictators, they shoot and torture their own people, their own mothers and their fathers, right? And we lie at the pinnacle of that, of control over the planet where all these crazy people live. So that tells you something about who we are. First of all, a lot of people don't forget who we are. That's the, you know, and when you remake yourself, first you have to ask who you are. You have to figure out, okay, who am I and why am I connected to the civilization? What is this civilization doing in terms of how do we value people? Right? How do we value people? We look at people as labor. We don't look at people as human beings. We, we claim to believe in a God of one kind or another, but if you look at how we treat each other, there's not much God in that. It, like Larry was saying, it's not. It doesn't take a rocket science, a scientist, to realize that the system is broken, because it begins, first of all, it begins with an attitude that you're less than human, you're not worth our time or effort. Meanwhile, we'll spend billions of dollars you know, keeping you away, but we won't help you. Now,
but for, like Farhan is saying, though, the system wants it broken.
It needs
it
broken.
Wants to keep it broken.
It has
That's
to.
That's your point, right?
Well, the thing is that it has to, because those communities upstate have no farms, and they have no factories, because the rich have sent all that to China because they could pay cheaper for it. So it is there is a dynamic going on, which is true. So they shift all these jobs up there so they don't have anarchy and, you know, what happens when people start starving. Especially those people who are supposed to be the ones that count and have weapons and guns and all that are not criminals. What happens to them?
What happens to us right now is we're going to take a brief break and take an enjoyable break to the Greek Isles of Crete. Ooh, listen to the music of Theodorakis. This is Zorba the Greek. And we'll be back in just a couple minutes to the Rebbe, the Radical, and the Rev. Hi, Jim Vredo's here again. We're back, and I tell you, if that music doesn't make you feel alive, nothing will. But we do need to return to a broken system, as you put it, and a system that is rooted in death, it seems like, and perpetuating, certainly, what was the movie? Dead Man Walking, right?
We live in a civilization that's dead man walking.
Yeah, in prison and out. And so how do we transform this? How do we begin this slow and the hard process of getting people out of this mindset and political and economic system that perpetuates it? And I turn to the solution expert here, Beatty.
Well, I wish there were a simple solution, but to me, you know, when you're looking at people who are committing crime, or whether I'm looking at patients of mine who are calling me up with problems of depression and anxiety or sexual abuse issues, you have to really look at what is this all about, and one has to really get to the root of the problem. And with everybody who has gone to prison, it's not because they were bad people, but it was always because of something that either happened or didn't happen in their lives. So if they were given an opportunity, you know, once they went in, to really get some great individual psychotherapy. Group therapy is great, and from what we were talking about before the show, in a prison that you were in, it was once a month, which is never going to do the trick. I mean, it's better than nothing. But every individual should have an opportunity to work with somebody intensively. I mean, you have all this time. Why waste it? I mean, think about all the things that you can accomplish. I mean, getting degrees, really working out and working through your emotional and psychological and psychiatric problems. And I don't believe that it's going to cost that much. I mean, you were saying it costs $150,000 a year to house a prisoner. Just think of what we could do with that $150,000 a year to rehabilitate the person while they were in prison, and to take that money and give it to them to help them with rehabilitation once they got out. It's not rocket science, and I agree that on some level there seems to be either a conscious or an unconscious desire to keep this broken system broken.
Well, in terms of opportunities and degrees, we were talking during the break, we have people here that have had, what, six degrees here. And what has that meant to your lives? And Angel talking about you wanted to be an engineer, right, a physicist. And so what's going on here? You have degree, well, four degrees,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but one thing I want to say now about what's going on is that it's almost impossible to achieve that nowadays.
Oh yeah.
As a result of all of the successful people, I'm saying as a result, that did not commit a crime upon release because of the education level they had received. It seemed that some people took irk of that and they removed the college programs out of their system, even though it was clearly proven that education and recidivism was inversely related.
So again, we're back to that vengeance and retribution. I taught many years in prison, sociology and criminology courses, and again, I think what Larry's been pointing out is that this and we all have Angel too. This focus on death and punishment and again, how do we begin to change the narrative through wonderful programs that you're developing here? It seems like you're the conscience. You become the moral voice here for the rest of the society.
The more I've dealt with these kind of problems, you have a lot of time to think and read while you're in prison.
Absolutely.
You know? And a basic question, you know, I mean, when you first go to prison, you're oblivious to a lot of things that are happening outside your immediate domain, the community that you were operating in, you know. And then you begin to ask, how did I really get into this situation?
Exactly.
Everybody says, I'm the one that's got to change.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And the more I begin to read, the more I begin to understand that we don't live in a vacuum. You know, it's a situation where in a world, we act upon the world and the world act upon us. You know, we can't act outside the world, you know. We live in response to a world. We throw the ball against the wall, and the wall throws the ball back to us. So to say that I have to be changed, but the environment that I grew up
also
in,
has
right, that impinged upon me and helped shape my responses.
It's a great point.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the status quo is cool. I mean, nothing wrong with the status quo. It's you. It's the devil in you. Status quo is fine. Operates just well,
right.
You know? At least for everybody else but you, so it's got to be certain about it with you. That's what they tell me.
So it's, again, denial by the system and fixing the blame.
Have you ever wondered whatever happens to psychopaths that never get caught? They become successful people. They're actually on Wall Street. Those are the guys that grabbed the $700 billion, by the way. Mm-hmm. They talked about it on the thing. And then they are in power. And, you know, these are the psychotics that never got arrested, that never learned the lesson that why you don't do the things, like what Larry's saying. We're all a community and we all live together. And every action has a ramification. You know, you make, after a certain point, you can't pay yourself $20 million a minute, and the guy actually doing the work is starving. That doesn't make any sense. Eventually, the system collapses just from the sheer inequality that it creates. So, you know, you got to wonder what happens to these psychopaths that never go to jail, and they go into Wall Street, and they go into colleges. They become successful bankers, and guess where they are? They're the ones saying, you have to change.
Mm. And Vidi, I know you've done a lot of work on that, haven't you? A powerful man, and what's the psychic dynamics that's going on there with these people who are perpetuating such violence on people?
They don't care. And you're absolutely right, Angel. They have not had to deal with consequences, legal or family or otherwise. And so they go on business as usual.
And become very successful. Now we have drones. They're telling me that I'm supposed to feel safer when I see the same guy with the machine gun that used to be on the wall, now in front of the subway station. And I'm supposed to feel safer. And I'm supposed to think, gee, I'm no longer in prison. Really? You're creating a giant prison by allowing stupidity to reign, by not developing, you know, like he says, if you don't change the communities where you come from, if you don't change the people around you. And that's, I guess, that's what we're doing. We're trying to change our communities by changing the people first, most adversely affected by it. That hopefully there'll be more of us to hopefully turn the turn the fire down a little bit. Try to fight that flame.
You know, it's so interesting, Larry. I'm Canadian. So I grew up in Canada, educated in Canada, and come from, it's, you know, as I was saying before the show, a kinder, gentler world. And as an example, when I did my postgraduate work at McGill, I started off in the inner city school world as a school social worker. And then myself and two other women, we actually ran the entire school social services program for the province of Quebec, hundreds of schools, you know, hundreds of school boards, where we were able to implement our programs where we were able to identify early on at the kindergarten level kids that were having problems. I mean, there was early identification when kids were 5 or 6. If there were problems, they were referred to a school social worker. If there was a need for psychological testing, that happened. There were home visits. I did all of this. The teachers, the nurses, the psychologists, the social workers, the MDs, we worked together as a team. Now, it was taken for granted.
That's what would be done.
And nobody worried about the resources and the dollars. We saved hundreds of millions of dollars in preventing the kinds of situations that come about when there are no programs. And when I have tried to approach school boards here in the United States, there's no money, there's no time. If there are social workers, they have ridiculously large caseloads where it's completely impossible to be able to do good clinical work. So it goes back to what you're saying. Somewhere there seems to be a need to keep the system broken. Mm-hmm. It makes me crazy.
Well, it works.
Yeah. And it works.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think one of the things we have to realize is that
for whom?
For a lot of people, a majority of the people, these things are outcomes of events over which they have no control. And it's hard for them to understand that these things happen because of design. These things just don't happen. These things happen because of a design. As I said before, we live in a world. And the world that we live in is shaped by the economics, the political life, you know, the economic life, the educational life in the community, you know, the environmental conditions of the community that we live in.
The mental health.
You know, they don't talk about changing those things. They talk about changing the individual. As if, you know, you put a person in jail, you try to change him, then you send him right back to the same conditions that created his problem in the first place.
I expect them to be right as rain.
The other thing is that, you know, what people don't seem to realize, you know, there's the big thing today is reinvestment. You know what I mean? If we stop doing all the things that don't work in prison and stop sending as many people to prison as we do send, we can take that money and reinvest it in the community to deal with the conditions that cause these kind of things, you know? The problem is
into the programs that you guys have been developing.
Well, they said a lot of people want to change. Like, I wanted to be an engineer. You know, they had me for 30 years. I could have been an engineer, or actually, I wanted to be a physicist. Now, I was like, okay, I don't have no education. I was like you. I couldn't read or write, and, you know, and then I finally found my mind, and, like, I got a mind. You know, it was like a new concept to me, you know, and realized I could think, and that, you know, and my thoughts were like the same people I was reading. I was like, wow, I thought the same thing. You know, so I was no different. I was learning that I was just is the same as everybody else, except that my thinking was flawed, you know, because I was attached to the wrong kind of things. I wasn't attached to the people in my life. I was attached to things. I wanted money. I wanted things, clothes. I wasn't attached to people, and people were the most important, most valuable things we own. I wasn't attached to life. I was attached to death. So that was helpful to find that. It was actually a mental health thing. I think this society needs a mental health, at least a mental health checkup every once in a while, as a civilization. What Larry is saying is, you know, even if we do change the individuals, if you put them back under the same conditions, how long do you think before some of them will revert? Because they think that's normal. They haven't understood that, no, your change is more normal than what you're okay now. You're mentally stable now. You were unstable when you were living there. Even if you weren't committing a crime, you're more stable now mentally and psychologically than you were when you were living in that community.
So, but within, even with an intensive support system, it's still precarious.
It's a horror show.
It's a horror show, even with the sort of excellent services that one gets at Fortune and so
well,
on.
Well, you know, when we talk about a person coming home, we talk about reentry. Yeah. Reentry back into the community. We're talking about easing this person back into the same conditions that put him there now. You know, reentry deals with the individual. Reentry doesn't deal with the community. Reentry is different from reintegration.
Right.
Reintegration means, and reentry means giving him his substance when he first comes home.
Just coming back into the same community.
They
and so, you know, when you really take a good look at that, most people in prison seem to think that, well, I got this sentence. And when I finish the sentence, that's over with. I can start all over afresh.
No.
I have been rehabilitated. I have the skills now to go back in the community and work and save my money and buy a home in the country and have a dog named Spot and that whole American dream. You know? And then when he comes outside, he says that, wait a minute, not only is it almost impossible for him to get employment, housing, social services, even education, going to college today, you got to check that box. If you've been in prison and you've got a felony, you're not having it. So your whole life chances have been destroyed. I mean, the American dream is based upon the promise that you can move up in life. You can you can traverse those steps to the highest levels, even become president. You know, we point to the guy and they say, you can become that. But that's not true at all. All the avenues are locked and closed off from you. And these things didn't happen by happenstance. It means to say that you're less competitive in a capitalist society, that we didn't have to worry about you. We have a caste system now.
Oh, yeah.
Of those who carry the mark of the beast.
So all
they've got that felony.
Them, yeah.
They've been in the criminal justice system. They're not allowed to vote, to have good jobs, to do anything in a society that would move them up, you know, and give them a chance at life. Their life chances have been destroyed.
And God forbid that you say you've never been in prison because you're ashamed of that. They find that out, you lose your job.
Yeah,
so no matter what, it's always punishment.
That, you know, that, so my whole approach and my programmatic approach in prison is to teach this to the people in prison and have people in prison and say, you have to develop yourself to the point that when you come outside, you can become part of the life struggles in your community to overcome those things, to overcome the status quo, to challenge the political, economical, and all of those things that are arrayed against you.
So be strong yourself as well as with the community.
Don't come outside and think that everything is forgotten about.
No.
You know, I think the greatest threat and what's happening today now, there used to be a time when I came to prison, you know, there was a difference between me and what I call the square people in my community, those people who did good, you know, had block associations, did all that good stuff and all that. And they were the majority voice in my community. They represented the better upper class crust of the community and stuff. It was only those people that were committing crimes and stuff didn't have a shot at it. They would look there. But that's changed. The majority, we lock up so many people that the majority of the people in our community now have come in contact with the community, with the criminal justice system.
Right.
Some of them did time, some of them did, but they've all felt that boot on their neck when they got arrested. And what we find now is that the majority of the people in our community are aware of that. And so crime doesn't mean the same thing now. Crime doesn't mean the same thing as a person who's never been in a jail, so never been locked up, never been stopped and frisked, never been 30 years with a boot on his neck, you know? But we have people, the majority of the people in our prison have now, in our communities now. So how we conceive of prisons and how we should perceive the move, that's the next step.
Yep.
You know, the people coming out of prison need to take, you know,
charged politically.
Voice.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll just add to that one of the profound analytical studies that Larry and Eddie Ellis did many years ago inside was to scrutinize the people in the system and discover that 85% of them came from 7 neighborhoods in New York City.
Yeah.
85% of the state prison population came from 7 neighborhoods.
Police precincts, yeah.
Yeah. And so when you think about that, you have to ask the question, why? And I would argue that economics plays a large role in that. And so, as I was saying before, when we begin to do our survey and discover that concern about what's being provided for the people that we intended to get out, I had to recognize that it would have been irresponsible for us not to shift a lot of our focus on trying to develop those service providers to make a way for these people as we work to get them out. That was just important and would have been irresponsible had we not done that.
As we're transitioning ourselves, which is even crazy. As we're trying to integrate ourselves, we're trying to help those integrate themselves.
What it really boils down to is this, you know, the traditional way of dealing with people, reform, what we call reform, is to get people to become part of the, to adjust themselves and to become part of the status quo. Mm-hmm. We use a non-traditional approach to crime and criminal justice. Mm-hmm. We teach them that you must challenge the status quo. It is the status quo that really is arrayed against you and got you coming to jail back and forth all the time.
So. As Cornel West says, don't be adjusted to injustice.
Well, it's true.
It is true. You know, the one thing that as I'm listening to this conversation tonight, you know, we're talking about politics, we're talking about retribution, we're talking about punishment and death. And what about relationships? Mm. You know, you come out, you've been in, whether it's for 1 year, 5 years, 30 years, 35 years. And I've talked to, you know, a lot of men, and I'm currently treating young women in their mid-20s who are convicted felons, who have been in for a variety of different, in quotes, offenses. And what they're saying to me is, we need to learn something about relationships. So what happens in the relationship realm here in New York City when people are coming out after 20, 30, 35 years?
It's funny that me and Larry used to have these conversations about relationships and about learning about relationships, learning what a people are, the give and takes and all that.
I don't think that we realize a resocialization takes place when you go into prison. A resocialization in the sense that all your autonomy is gone. You've done what you're told to do. You know, your decision-making powers are gone, all of that. You find yourself in a situation where authority is really, truly in control. There's very little decisions that you have to make on your own.
And no real chance to make a relationship.
Over time, that becomes
normal.
You know, normal.
The way you think it.
That becomes ingrained in you. You know, you adapt yourself. 30 years of living that kind of situation. You know, I can remember my greatest fear was that if it was to tell me to go home, my greatest fear was I didn't want to go back and live in that situation that I lived before. It was hard for me to conceive myself living in an environment where I had somebody around me all the time. I was living in that single cell. 8x12 cell for 30 years.
The chance to care again and to love.
I got accustomed to it, and it was agreeable with me.
Wow,
that was difficult. That was difficult.
Yeah, and so there are times. I mean, to be truthful, there are times when I wish I was back in that situation because the decision making is so overwhelming.
Within the last 5 years, since right, is that what you're saying?
Well, and when we talk about the relationships, I remember I used to, me and Andrew used to talk about that. I used to get on the subway. I'd work two stops and I'd be soaking wet. I'd have to get off and come back, sweating. I'd hold on to pole and don't look up because you think everybody's looking at you. You know, post-prison adjustment is horrible for some people. My psychiatrist, I had to go see a psychiatrist. He told me there's some people that can do that and it's water off their back. He said, but there's other people like you. He said, at your age, I don't think that you'll live long enough to be cured, all that stuff.
Oh, that is something that I would really take exception to. Anybody who lived as long as you lived for in a prison and you're out, anything is possible with good support and good motivation.
Sure, you change.
You can do change. It. You can do it. I wouldn't believe that kind of negativity that you're too old.
I think it was more of a joke and more
Not that it's so. I mean, I'll show you some of the conditions. Some days I can't get out of my room at all, and I have a studio. I call it a glorified cell. I can't get out
of here. Well, this is strange that a lot of people seek the same thing. I noticed that out here, and that's why me and my friends we're careful about that, and we're always saying that. Saying don't seek yourself, don't build yourself one, because a lot of guys that have been in all a long time tend to eventually do that. They create a space and they create just like a cell. They create their own prison again, because it was so comfortable and so long that you get used to it. And it's only what is it we just said? If you're not feeling uncomfortable, something's wrong.
Well, I think we need to also talk about we've been applying this throughout the hour. A progressive movement, a mass movement, like we had in the 60s, and several of you have been talking about the Panthers, and a movement that does care and does transcend this pain and punishment and death that we perpetuate in this country, and love. This is what we need. And we see signs of it all over the place. And so I'm very hopeful. And you certainly, all of you in this room here today, are just incredible examples of what can be. And I just love you all so very much.
It's a pleasure working with you, Jim.
It is, and we're going to continue on. And we know we have allies all over the place. And Michelle Alexander, of course, is attempting to end mass incarceration. I'm having a meeting tomorrow with Professor Carl Hart at Columbia University. Some of you may know about him. He's a drug researcher.
Oh, yeah.
Grew up in a tough neighborhood in Miami. He is one of the leading voices calling us against the drug war. It's not drugs we should be fighting against. It's these conditions, the poverty, the hopelessness that people are then diverting themselves to through drugs. So it is about love. And as we go out here with Bob Marley, One World, love to all, and thank you so much, Larry, Beatty, Farad, and Angel. We'll see you all next week on The Rebbe, The Radical, and The Rev. Love to you all. Thank you so much. And I will feel all-